And now, let's turn to Inside the City, a weekly chat with local officials, residents, and personalities providing up-to-date and relevant information about what's happening in your city of Palmer. Moderated by Mike Malevsky.
Well, it's my great pleasure to welcome into the studio today George Collum, who is the longtime, I'm not sure what we would call you, George. Welcome, first of all, and then tell us what your present title is.
I'm the general manager of the golf course.
Ah, okay. That doesn't seem like a good enough title.
Well, I do a lot. I have a lot of hats there, but, you know, my golf company is contracted by the city of Palmer to run the golf course. So I oversee everything, grounds crew, and then the clubhouse, and I'm the tournament director. I do have a food and beverage manager, my assistant manager, Katie. And, but we have a great team, and it's been a pleasure actually to do this over the years. This is my 18th year at the golf course.
Wow. 18 years. Okay, let's get right to it. The summer seemed to be a nice mix of a little bit of sun, a little bit of rain, and I'm guessing that the golf course itself looks pretty green. I know our lawn around our house is extraordinary. It feels like I'm looking at Ireland when I look out there. What's the condition of the greens and the course itself?
Well, the course is... it's incredibly green, and it does remind me of looking at a picture from Ireland. You know, it's we had a slow start to summer back in early May. It was pretty cold, and then things really turned around, and we had a really nice June and July. You know, we had some decent temperatures, got up into the 70s, and lately we've had a lot of rain. But the course is incredibly lush. We're still mowing like crazy, trying to keep up with the growth of the grass. And now with all the rain, it makes it difficult because when when you mow a lawn and it's wet, it makes it hard to cut. So our mowers do a pretty good job. But, you know, we have to be really diligent about keeping up with the mowing. The greens are fantastic. They're the best I've ever seen them. And, you know, everybody that comes in and plays that's played the course for years says it's the best they've ever seen it.
Yeah. Yeah. Let's move on though. As we're talking today and for the foreseeable future, there's rain. The Alaska State Fair is upon us, and people have in all kinds of different ways said, well, this is fair weather that we're going to be dealing with. It's going to rain a bit more, cooler, in part because we're approaching fall. What happens, and I've gone by the golf course recently, what happens when you do have a kind of a steady rain, not pouring down rain? Do people still come out, or what kind of restrictions, et cetera, are there about using the golf course?
We do still have golfers coming out. I mean, we have golfers out there today, and it's not raining real heavy over there, but... you know, golfers understand that sometimes you got to play in inclement weather. As long as the golf course is open, they'll generally come play golf unless it's really extremely windy and rainy at the same time. But, you know, we've got golf going on sometimes into November up here, and it's really cold. And, you know, Alaskans get out and they do it while they can. And, you know, they take advantage of any chance they can to play golf. And so this time of year isn't too bad. I mean, people that are avid golfers don't mind playing if it's a little rainy. And, my thing is I don't mind playing in the rain as long as it's not a torrential downpour. A light rain's not too big of a deal. We did have to close the golf course due to rain a couple weeks ago for the second time since I've been there in 18 years. I've only seen that happen one other time where we got that much rain. We had flooding on the first fairway. We had puddling on the greens, and that's generally what happens when a golf course has to close due to rain. There has to be conditions that make it unplayable, and standing water on greens is one of the things you look for. You know, you can't putt through puddles, and you don't want people damaging the greens, so that's kind of where you draw the line.
Okay. I'm curious about other courses. I'm thinking that there are golf courses that are located, I think, of places like Scotland, which presumably, from what I've heard, has some bad weather from time to time. How do people deal with rain and bad weather in those kinds of locations?
Well, places like Scotland are kind of notorious for that kind of weather. So I think they just are mentally prepared to play golf and they know how to deal with it. You know, they have the proper gear. They have the right and you know, part of it's having the right mindset that you're just going to have to deal with wind and rain when you play golf. And as like I said, as long as the course is playable, as long as you don't have a lot of standing water, you can play golf. And there's some rules that you can apply to conditions when it's very wet. If you have a ball sitting in what they call casual water, you get free relief. So you can move your ball out of standing water. You don't have to hit out of a puddle or even stand in a puddle. And if you're on a green and there's a puddle, you get line of putt relief. So you can move it, you know, no closer to the hole across the green to wherever you have a fairly dry area to putt through. So you don't have to putt through puddles. So as long as that's doable, you can play golf. Courses in Scotland and Ireland tend to be very sand-based soil like we have here in Palmer.
Okay.
And they drain very quickly. And that's one of the features that Palmer Golf Course has going for it is that we have a very sandy type soil here, and the golf course drains incredibly well. We can have an inch of rain and it'll look like it's going to be flooded and closed for days, and it'll be dry and playable in a couple hours if it stops raining. It's a great feature for the course.
Okay. One thing that I noticed on one of the days that a little bit rainy, that there was someone who had an umbrella. Not only did they have their selection of golf clubs, but they had an umbrella there. How often do you see anyone using an umbrella?
Well, for whatever reason, Palmer Golf Course does not get a lot of rain typically. We seem to be in a kind of a little bubble right here with the mountain range, and so the rain goes around us quite a bit. So it's not really something we see a lot at Palmer Golf Course, but in general, yes, you do see lots of golfers with umbrellas. I mean, an umbrella's pretty standard in people's golf equipment, you know. Okay. If you open a golfer's trunk, you're going to find their clubs and you're probably going to find an umbrella and rain gear right there. You know, so you have to be prepared for those conditions, and an umbrella really makes a big difference, especially if you're walking or you have a push cart or a pull cart, because now they have the ability to mount the umbrella right on the handlebars.
So right,
you
can
stand underneath it while you're walking and it keeps your clubs dry. So it's really neat. Yeah.
Very good. So one of the things we haven't talked about in all the times you've been in is the way clothing affects a person's play. You know, obviously there are sports, biking, for example, et cetera, and people have learned over time that wearing certain things makes everything more comfortable. And I'm thinking one of the things about golf, though, is the ability to be protected from the elements. If you happen to be into November, it's a little cooler, it's a little wet, whatever, but still be able to move and not be encumbered by your clothing.
Yeah, absolutely. So, it's really important. Yeah.
So what have you seen? Has there been a development in what's worn over the years that has made it easier to play in all kinds of weather?
Yeah, I mean, if you look back into the history of golf and you look back into the late 1800s, early 1900s, they were playing in suits and ties. It's odd to look at that and think how that would be so uncomfortable. I mean, when it's hot, you know, weather. So, you know, when it's inclement weather or the weather's cold, there has been incredible advancements in rain gear and wind gear over the years. They have this material now that's stretchable. So it's waterproof and it's stretchable, which is a great combination. So it allows a person swinging a golf club more flexibility and motion, which is really important for golf. I know when I play golf, if I'm bound up with a lot of clothing or a rain jacket that doesn't really give much and there's no flexibility, it makes swinging a golf club very difficult and you get uncomfortable, right? So, you know, like we've always said, it's important to layer your clothing, have multiple layers of clothes. And during a round of golf up here, especially, you could have, you know, the weather could change three or four times during that 4.5-5 hours. So having a rain jacket that you can fold up and put in your golf bag and get off of you when it's not raining. And then having some thermal undershirts to put on, you know, is really important, but you have to have room to swing, and that's important too. So I think avid golfers, better golfers, are very particular about the clothing they wear for golf. You know, they have their favorite jackets and their favorite rain pants, and you know, they'll spend a good amount of money on it. You know, a really good rain suit for golf could cost $500.
Ooh. Yeah. Okay. Okay. So and of course, as I think about it, there's another aspect we haven't talked about, and you have a number of people, since you can't be everywhere at once, who act as marshals. Okay, they don't carry, they don't have a badge and a weapon, but they are around. Maybe share with listeners who are not familiar with that. What are the responsibilities of a marshal, and how does a person become a marshal?
Well, typically at the beginning of each season, I've got some of the retirees that live out here that are avid golfers, and they like to be involved with the golf course and help the golf course. So they'll give me a call or come in and visit me and tell me that they would like to marshal. And typically I'll only have 14, you know, shifts to cover, so I need 7 marshals. They usually do a couple shifts a week. And their responsibility is really making sure that people are following the basic etiquette and rules of playing golf on a golf course, right? They're not driving their carts where they shouldn't be. They're not abusing the golf course. They're not, you know, taking divots out of greens. And a big part of their responsibility is educating the golfers, educating the public, because you get lots of people that come out and play golf that have never been on a golf course or played much golf. And so someone has to give them some guidance out there occasionally. And we'll see groups that come out and we'll identify a group that, okay, this group obviously hasn't played much golf. They all rented clubs. They don't really seem to understand any of the process. So we'll usually get a hold of the course marshal, and he'll come out and kind of guide him around for a few holes and, you know, just keep an eye on him occasionally throughout the round. Course marshals also help rake sand traps that are, you know, kind of messed up. They'll go around and put up the ropes and stakes where we want to keep carts away from these areas. They refill the water jugs on the golf course, and they sand and seed divots, especially on tee boxes. They move the tee markers and, you know, whatever other things we need them to do during, you know, the day. They may run supplies out to our snack shack on the 9th hole.
Sure.
So they have a lot of responsibilities, but their main thing at most golf courses is just making sure that the general public is, you know, playing golf safely and following the basic rules and etiquette.
Are these positions volunteer or?
They are volunteer, yes.
Volunteer positions. Yeah. And do you usually find yourself with enough knowledgeable people each year that come out and say, yeah, I'd like to do this?
I do, and I usually have a lot of returners, you know, that come back each year. So we do some formal training. You know, I'll have meetings with them, and we'll sit down and talk about how to set up a tee box properly and, you know, how to address a situation, you know, on a golf course where you have slow play and, you know, you need to talk to a group that's playing slow and holding up the rest of the golf course. And, you know, that's also part of their thing. They need to keep the pace of play up. And there's a lot of, you know, finesse to doing that kind of thing.
Right.
Nobody really likes to be told that they're slow or even be told what to do. So you have to be careful how you approach them. You know, I marshaled for years and years when I was younger, and you know, you just learn the situation, you know, watch what the golfers are doing. It's really a bad idea to approach a golfer that has just made a terrible score on a hole and then tell them that they're too slow. they usually won't receive that very well. So, you know, you try to start some rapport with them early on, you know, let them know you're there to help, and you're not really there to police them and, you know, really order them around. But you know, and every once in a while, somebody will have a bad reaction to the course marshals. They don't like being watched, you know. So you got to just kind of feel out each situation, you know, for each group.
Okay. Okay. Well, we've talked about some generalities involving the golf course. Specifics coming up. We're here in August. What do you see as big events, activities, and so on at the course this year?
We just wrapped up our club championship last weekend, and we had about 100 golfers in that, and that's pretty typical each year. Mostly local, you know, Palmer people, but it is open to the general public because it's a municipal golf course. So we do get people that come from Anchorage or Kenai or Fairbanks, you know. But the locals did really well. I would say that they were the majority of the winners in each division. This coming weekend, we have the Alaska Team Match Play, which is the state pros against the top AMs in the state.
Wow.
So it's kind of a Ryder Cup type format where, you know, you play team matches, you know, the first day in the morning match, you have a best ball where two guys play against the other two. And you take the best score on each hole. And then in the afternoon, we do an alternate shot where, and that's really what it is. One player tees off, their teammate hits the next shot, and you alternate until you finish each hole. And then in the Sunday matches, it's all singles, and you just play head-to-head match play against another player on the other team. So we've been doing this for quite a long time, and it's kind of a real prestigious thing. And Palmer Golf Course has been the home for this event for a dozen years at least. And so we're looking forward to that. That's a lot of fun. And then we have our Hall of Fame tournament coming up. That's on September 8th. And it's a two-person scramble. And each year we induct somebody that has been kind of instrumental into golf in the area. This year, Jess Werner is being inducted into the Hall of Fame. He was a really big part of Fishhook Golf Course and also Palmer Golf Course. He's been part of the scene for a long time.
Right.
And then we have on September 15th, we have the VGA. It's a scramble. It's the Valley Golf Association, and it's also known as the Heel Cup. And that's a fundraiser tournament for them for scholarships for college students.
Okay.
And, you know, so that's a fun one too. It's another two-person scramble. Then we have a charity tournament September 22nd, and that's raising funds for the Yak Center down in Palmer. So that's a great one to be involved in too. It's a four-person scramble team. And then October 6th, we have our Oktoberfest tournament, which is our wrap-up tournament for the year. It's kind of a fun get-together. Things are getting cold. We might have to wait for the snow to melt, you know, but it's a blast, and everybody enjoys it, and it's cold and, you know, kind of goofy, but, you know, it's just a fun – it's probably one of the most fun tournaments we run for the whole year and one of the best attended tournaments. So everybody, you know, is really excited. They're kind of bummed that golf's coming to an end, but it's a great wrap-up tournament for us. But if anybody has any questions or wants to sign up, they can call the clubhouse at 745-GOLF.
Okay. One of the questions that comes up each time we talk has to do with any changes to the physical plant. Both the clubhouse, obviously, perhaps golf courts, carts, et cetera. What do you have to say about that?
We are looking at adding golf carts to the fleet. It's been quite a long time since we've freshened up the cart fleet. So I have had some meetings with Brad Hansen with the city, and he's the community development director. And
right.
So we're talking about it. We're currently looking at some options, whether we're going to add newer brand new carts, or we're going to get lease return carts, refurbished carts. So they're quite expensive. To get just 10 new carts is about $60,000. So it's quite a expensive undertaking. And the carts we have, most of them run well. There's a few that, you know, each year you have a little bit of attrition and the carts start to kind of die out. And but we're looking at probably adding 10 to 20 carts to the fleet for next year. We're also looking at golf boards, those surfboard looking type things that you ride on, standing on like a skateboard, and the clubs are mounted on the front, and they've become really popular, you know, around the country. And, you know, we're looking at maybe getting four of those if we can fit it in the budget.
Whoa, stop a moment. Because as you were talking, I was going to ask you about Segways, for example, but this is in that same direction. Describe them for the listener who is not quite familiar with the item.
Yeah, it was actually developed by a surfer, Laird Hamilton. He's a real famous surfer, and he lived over in Hawaii, and they came up with this design where it's kind of like a combination of a scooter and a skateboard.
Right.
So you stand on it, and it has handlebars.
Okay.
And it kind of operates sort of like a Segway, where you kind of push the handlebars forward and backward and sideways. And then you know, if you push it forward, it goes forward, the handlebars. And then you kind of sort of lean into the turns a little bit. I would say it's much easier to ride than a skateboard, though. It's definitely way safer than a skateboard. You have to take a little bit of a training tutorial before you go out. But they're pretty simple to ride. I rode one at the PGA Merchandise Show a couple years ago, and they're real stable and easy to do. And the Palmer Golf Course is perfect for them because it's pretty flat. You know, if it was a real hilly golf course, it could be a little more dangerous.
Sure.
But our course being the what it is, flat, and the soil being firm all the time, it's perfect for that kind of thing.
So are there courses that you're familiar with that have been using these now for some time?
Yeah, Settlers Bay was the first course up here to bring in four, and then I know Moose Run brought in eight. I think it either this year or last year they brought in eight of them.
Wow.
And, you know, the reaction from the public is pretty positive. I mean, people – sometimes it's just, you know, kind of a – you know, for one-time deal, they want to do it, and then they get over it. And then some people are really into it, and they like to do it, you know, do it once a week. And
so this is kind of an interesting – it sounds like it's a between thing. A little faster than walking, not quite as involved as having a cart. Yeah. And the prices, are they – what kind of prices would you be paying to get them?
Well, one golf board is about the price of a golf cart.
Oh.
So, and the one of the problems with them is only one person can ride on them at a time. So you almost have to double the cost of riding in a golf cart for somebody to use them. But because they're so limited and you only have four of them, people don't seem to mind paying a little extra to do it. And they are fun. And for younger people who might be thinking about playing golf, it might attract them to sure. trying it, you know?
Sure.
And sometimes that's all it takes to get somebody started is that first time. You know, they come out and they're like, oh, I want to ride on one of the golf boards. And they play golf and they have a good time. And then maybe they get over the idea of the golf board and they are more interested in just playing golf. So the golf industry for quite a long time has been always trying to figure out how to get more people to play golf, right?
Sure.
You know, golf has always been looked at as kind of an elitist sport for the wealthy, but that changed over the years, especially as Tiger Woods became really prevalent on the scene. It opened up the world of golf to the rest of the world, right? It became kind of a mainstream thing instead of just an elitist sport. You saw a lot more coverage on ESPN and television. So that really helped. And since Tiger Woods has been making his comeback, it's also helped the industry. So, you know, he really does move the needle in golf. So it's been helping.
So as you're talking about this, what pops up in my head is a technology that would allow you to have a big board in the clubhouse where you could see where everybody was. You know, a simple identification device that someone checked out when they went out, and then you'd be able to, you know, be able to visualize, okay, here we go. Here's where everybody is. Here's where there's a collection of people that are seem to be accumulating, et cetera, or whatever. Is that something that is available in some places, or what about that?
Yeah, they have GPSs on golf carts now,
okay.
So they can track where golf carts go. Mm-hmm. And I know that some of the more advanced ones, if you drive your golf cart where it doesn't belong too close to a green, it'll actually slow the cart down almost to a crawl. It'll start beeping to identify that you're too close to it or you're in an area you shouldn't be. So you basically have to back the cart out of there right away or the cart will eventually stop running. So, you know, that's a really neat feature, but it's super expensive. You know, you don't usually see that at a municipal type course. That's more resort courses that have that kind of stuff. But you can, you know, there are GPSs and ways to track people on the golf course. I'm actually a little surprised that drones haven't been used more
right.
to track golf. I honestly have not seen much of it yet. There are some disadvantages to drones. They do make noise, you know,
sure.
and somebody's got to be running it and, you know, managing it. And there's an expense there too. So generally that's the course marshal's job is to kind of keep track of the golf course, you know, and make sure that there's not any big pileups on the golf course. But as technology advances, I'm sure we'll see more of that, you know, type of thing.
Well, very good. Well, we've got a short time left here, George. Any last comments you'd like to share with listeners before we finish?
Well, the golf course is in fantastic shape, and, you know, I hope everybody gets a chance to come out and take advantage of the rest of the summer. You know, I would encourage you, any chance you get, to come out and play as much golf as you can, and it's not too late to take golf lessons. You know, we do have Joe Butler, our teaching professional, available for golf lessons, and you know, it's a great game. And when you travel, there's golf courses all over the world, and it gives you just that one extra thing to do on a vacation. You know, it's, and golf courses typically are in the, you know, most beautiful locations along, you know, oceans and lakes, and you know, it's just such a serene, beautiful thing. You know, if you can get over your golf score and not worry about that so much and just enjoy being out in nature, that's a big part of it. So, you know, hopefully we get a little bit of a longer summer. I've heard rumors that we're going to have a little bit of an Indian summer, and we'll keep our fingers crossed for that. Because sure. I don't think anybody's too much of a hurry to get to winter. So
okay. Yeah. Well, maybe Thanksgiving golfing at the Bomber Golf Course.
It's happened before, but it's pretty rare.
Okay. Well, thank you, George Cullen, for coming in today. And we've been talking about the Palmer City Golf Course. Have a good day.
Thank you.
You've been listening to Inside the City, a weekly chat with local folks providing up-to-date and relevant information about what's happening in your city of Palmer. Moderated by Mike Malevsky. This program is a production of Radio Free Palmer, recorded at our studios in Palmer, Alaska. The views and opinions of moderators and guests do not necessarily represent those of Radio Free Palmer, the station, or its underwriters. If you have any comments or questions, please email manager@radiofreepalmer.org.